Well, everybody, we're back. I am Jay Ward.
And I'm Wayne Carini, and this is Talking Classic Cars.
Wayne, guess who I saw last weekend?
So, Jay, who just saw you last weekend?
I just saw our friend Chris Jacobs.
All right.
Yeah, so I was at the Cobra Experience Museum in Martinez. They asked me to do a talk there. And Chris Jacobs sat down with Drew Serb, the owner of the museum, and did a little Q&A session with him about how that collection came together. And if you haven't been there, it's you'd never know there was that many AC Cobras and Shelbys in one place.
So is this the place? It's in wine country?
It's not quite in wine country. Martinez is kind of East Bay. It's really in a very nondescript area of the East Bay. You would not expect this museum to be there. And this is Drew's collection that he built up over time. And it's...
Is this the same guy that's got a place up in north of Petaluma, and he's got Cobras on the wall in his garage or something?
He's got, yeah, he has quite a bit of stuff at his house, and he has English wheels and wood bucks, and he's making bodies at his house as well, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that's the same guy. So I was up in Petaluma visiting a friend, and Bill Friedman, who owns a group of hardware stores up there.
Yeah.
And we didn't have time, but he said, next time you're over, I want to take you over and see this guy's Cobra collection. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's actually closer to me. He's in a little town called Briones, which is close to me. And that's where he's keeping all, got great stuff. And then the museum is phenomenal. And then he bought from one of, so when Shelby America shut down, Carroll wanted to get rid of all the stuff. And he sold everything, lock, stock, and barrel, to one of the mechanics there for 10 grand. And it had the dynamometer. It had, you know, all the old tooling and dies and everything. And this guy had it for years and years and years. And Drew finally bought the whole thing for him. So he has all the equipment that was used at Shelby America, almost everything. It's phenomenal what he's got.
You know, I kicked myself. There was a collector here in the Newport area, Rhode Island, and Paul Andrews was his name. And I sold three of his Cobras. He had two 427s, one streetcar, an SC, and then a 289 comp car. And it was a USRRC car. And so we sold those cars. And he had a huge collection of everything Cobra. I mean, jackets and pens and signs. And I mean, oh my God, it was unbelievable. And as he was failing in health, he wanted to sell it all to me. And he threw out this crazy number, which now I kick myself. I mean, he had rings, and he collected all this stuff all these years, and then
so the question is, what happened to all of it?
Yeah, well, I have no idea. Paul sort of, as his health was declining, his daughter and his son-in-law took over the stuff, and I don't know,
probably sold a lot of it off.
Sold everything off.
I'll tell you this, you never know when stuff will come back around. This is not automotive related, but yesterday I just read that Paul McCartney's original Hofner Beetle bass was found after 52 years. It was stolen in 1972. Think about that. Wow. The original Paul McCartney Hofner bass, the bass from 1961 he played with the Beatles. I mean, the iconic bass, stolen in 72, just was found in this guy's attic in Sussex, and they gave it back to him.
Wow.
So
that's great.
You know, there's some car, Wayne, that you sold a long time ago that got stolen and moved around, and somehow the stuff will come back to you again. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, there's so many things out there. And it's as we dig deeper and deeper into the automotive history, we find all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, I'll be going tomorrow afternoon. There's a local guy that's got a 50 Merc that I've been trying to buy for close to 35 years. And unfortunately, he passed away, but he left a note to please call Wayne Carini.
Nice.
And so his niece called me last week, and she's coming up to Connecticut, and I'm going to go look at the car and hopefully be able to buy it. It's just his Mercury that he had it since brand new.
Okay.
And sort of hot rodded it up a little bit, put some fender skirts on it, and did little things to it. Nothing major.
Still flathead powered.
Well, flathead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think it's important to save a car like that.
I'll tell you something happening in the market. As you know, there's been a bit of a adjustment, a lot of stuff. One of the things that have gotten the softest, which will be to your advantage, is a lot of the post-war American stuff, 49 to 51 Mercs that were kind of hot for a while, have really cooled down. They're not big money. Model A's, not big money. The only things of those cars that are kind of holding strong are 32 Fords will always, you know, hold strong. But a lot of the other stuff is really people are having a harder time moving it for the numbers they want now. So that, you know.
Yeah, I think a Model A will always stay in that $25,000 to $30,000 category.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those cars that always seems to do okay. I mean, you know, a car might be a strange sale and sell for $45,000 to $50,000, but you know, a nice little Model A Roadster pickup truck. They're great cars because it's easy to maintain. You can get parts for them anywhere.
Yeah.
And basically you could go across the country and all you have to do is you have to have an extra set of spark plugs, about five condensers and five coils, because that's the biggest problem is coils and the condensers go. The minute you hear your car running or very rough and starts to backfire, just change the condenser and the world is all good again. And maybe the coil, but you have points and a cap and a rotor and that stuff. You can drive across this country. That's not a problem. Jonathan Klinger proved it, worked for Hagerty.
Yep.
And he drove a Model A for one solid year, was his only means of transportation.
That's right.
Yeah. He would drive it in the snow. He'd have to fly out and sometimes drive down to Detroit to catch some flights in a snowstorm. And here he is driving his Model A on the highway, you know, 45, 50 miles an hour.
Poor guy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but he did it. He plowed through. I mean, you know, no heat.
No.
Very little heat coming off the engine. So yeah, it's kind of a cool story. But yeah, I know what you mean. There's some cars that are really starting to falter. 40s, mid, and of course, because of the war, I mean, they stopped production in 42 and didn't really start back up again until 47. 48 was really the true startup.
Yeah.
Because of the war, because all the car manufacturers shut down to make tanks and Jeeps and yeah. every type of war effort type of materials.
Right.
And so when they came back, it's like a Cadillac in 41, 42, they shut down. And if you look at a 47 Cadillac, it looks exactly the same, except for they put the grill in upside down, made it look a little bit different. Put a couple of pieces of chrome extra on the car.
Yeah.
And made it new.
48 was a new one because 48 put the tail fins. Right. It was the last year of the flathead caddy, but the first year of the kind of little kind of P38 inspired tail fins. And then,
well, they had a little time to start ramping up
yeah.
with new designs and stuff. And Harley Earl was part of that team. And,
yeah.
you know, it was started some really great things, of course. And of course, with the war, everybody was planes. Everything was an airplane because of the war effort. You know, a lot of airplanes were made, and that's what really saved, you know, everything in the war. So airplanes became very, very famous, and they put them on every car that there was. I mean, you know.
So I'm writing a story right now for our friend David Lillywhite over at Octane, over at Magneto. He has Octane now, but I'm writing a story for Magneto about the American mascots of the 50s. And you're absolutely right. The aircraft influence on those mascots, the Oldsmobile Rocket, you know, even the Pontiac
right.
Chief's head had these airplane wings going off of it. The Lincoln mm-hmm. Premier was a knight in shining armor, but even he had little rocket wings on him. they were just great. Even the Packard Swan, the classic Packard Swan, kind of slowly mm-hmm. turned into an airplane. They just couldn't help themselves.
Everything was airplanes. We just did a story. I did a story, and I'm looking at my desk here. I don't have it, but if you get the new Magneto magazine.
Oh, yeah, you're in there.
Have you got your copy yet?
Yes, and you're in there.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it was great. It was a nice little feature on you. It's the Ayrton Senna. For the people who are looking, look for the one with the Ayrton Senna cover, and you flip inside. There's a great story about Wayne, pictures at his shop, pictures at the house, and a little bit of the story of how it all came to be.
Yeah, well, it was funny. David Lillywhite stopped by to just say hello, and they were at the Adrian event last year. And he said, hey, you know, let's just take some pictures and maybe we can throw a story together. So we sat down, had dinner, and he took some notes, and bang, this is what happened. He actually stopped in to get his car fixed, you know, cheap repair. He had gotten a crease in his rental car. And so one of my buddies is a dent wizard guy. So we got the dent fixed out, and I was buffing the car when he came to pick it up 7 o'clock the next morning. I'm in the shop by myself buffing. That's how it all happened. And then he says, well, while we're here, let's take some pictures and let's maybe make a story out of this. So
cool.
it was really nice of him to do that. You know, he and Jeff are just, they're salt of the earth guys. They love cars and they they have probably, it was funny, my wife saw the magazine last night and she goes, oh, what's this magazine? I said, it's the best damn magazine in the world.
Yeah, Magneto is phenomenal. I've got every issue. I'm looking at them here. And now, you know, David started at Octane a long time ago, and Octane was a beautiful magazine. It's a British magazine. For some reason, the British really still love their car magazines. When you go to the UK and you go to a newsstand, there's a nice selection of Land Rover magazines and Jag magazines and Porsche magazines. And, you know, they just, they really appreciate printed literature. Whereas in the US, it's, you know, it's faltered quite a bit. And Octane was always one of the best. That one, Car, was a good magazine. Evo, a couple of those. So right on.
Well, it's good. You know, you could subscribe to magazines, but I'm a bookstore junkie. So when I want to get a new magazine, I just go to Barnes and Noble local, and I spend a couple hours there sitting down.
Yep.
The ones I don't necessarily want to buy and take home, I thumb through them to see if there's an interesting article, and I will buy the magazine to read that article. But yet, it's an experience. You know, you could subscribe to these magazines and buy them for, you know, 1/25th of what you pay at the store, but it's the cost of the experience, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And speaking of books, there are a lot of good books. I did a book report last week. I'll do one again in the future. I've been picking up a series about Italian car designers, so I'll talk about that next time. But you know, right now I think the big news is we're getting pretty close to Amelia Island, and I'm looking at what Gooding's got offering and what Broad Arrow's got offering, and you and I have a couple things going on. So let's wrap about that a little bit.
Yeah, so Amelia is right around the corner, one of our favorite events of the year, if not my favorite event. This year, I'm very fortunate. My wife is traveling with me, so she hasn't been in about 15, 16 years down there, so we're going to have a good time. But Broad Arrow is just surprising me with all the great, great cars they have. Oh, my gosh, their catalog is just beautiful. They've got a lot of great automobiles, of course. Bonhams kicks it off on Thursday. They've always got some interesting stuff that most of the other auction houses don't have. A lot of pre-war stuff, a lot of brass stuff normally. And of course, the oldest auction house in the world. So, you know, it's always interesting to go over to Bonhams. I sometimes sell a car over there, but nothing this year. And then you got Gooding's. Our friend Ralph Morano's got a couple of cars in Gooding's, so it's going to be good to see. He's got a Chrysler Airflow and then a 16-cylinder Cadillac, which are going off on Saturday. So David always has a good catalog. We've been preparing a few of the cars that are going to be over there, so we'll go see what those cars. We got a couple of Bugattis that are going to be there and a BMW 315. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it's gonna be interesting, and then of course Broad Arrow, our new auction, they have taken over the Ritz Carlton ballroom, and they're gonna have their auction there like a previous auction house had previously, but their book is really solid. I mean, I'm very impressed with the amount of cars that they gathered together.
Yeah, they knew this was an important one for them, so I'm glad they did.
It is. It is. And then, of course, unfortunately, we have another event going on in Miami at the same time. So it was a situation where we sort of had to change or make sure that we went to the show that we really liked the most, which was Amelia. But it sort of messed up things because a lot of people would like to go to both events.
Sure. Sure. You don't want to have to choose.
You don't want to choose.
Maybe that'll get worked out in the future. And then you and I are going to a new event together that's going on Friday. Is that right?
Friday. Yeah. Yeah. So,
Tim,
it's a new event. It's going to sort of be the kickoff event. It's going to be a sort of a cars and coffee event. It's going to be in Fernandina Beach, mm-hmm. Right in a parking lot, right down on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tim, Sutterd is going to be putting that on. And so it's going to be interesting. Of course, Concordia Lemons is going to be part of the event also.
Mm-hmm.
So Alan Galbraith is going to be there. And I think that you, myself, Bill Warner, who was the original founder of the Amelia Island Concours, and Alan Galbraith, along with Tim, are going to be on stage or somewhere in the parking lot, maybe on a back of a flatbed truck.
Some luxurious location. Yeah.
That's right. And we're going to have a little talk. So it'll be a lot of fun. Pass some trophies out, make some people happy.
I love it.
And just have a good time. You know, Tim usually puts on a really, low-key, relaxed event, sort of like Lemons, you know, where we just have some fun, where we enjoy each other's company, we laugh, and look at some cool cars. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you at Amelia Island. Should be good.
What's new with the car? So we're preparing the Griffith, the 65 Griffith that was actually built in 64, but they call it a 65. Griffiths were TVRs, of course, with 289 engines in them put in. And Ford dealership in Long Island, Griffith Ford. And Jack Griffith did that project. There was a little under 200 of these cars made. I think 150 or 160 cars. So very unusual car. So we're prepping that. We're just after this chat we're having here, we're going to put the nose on it and sort of try to button it up for the truck to come. Intercity's going to be here next Thursday for that.
And where's the Griffith getting sold again?
It's not getting sold. So it's for a client of ours. I bought it. I was in the middle of the restoration for myself to keep the car. And I have a client that we restored his Edwards America, which you remember seeing last year.
Yep.
Pebble. And this is his new project with us. So we're going to show it down there. He doesn't know it yet, but we're going to surprise him.
Oh, that's great.
Done, so he's going to show up and it's going to be on the field.
Now, Wayne, I know we're almost out of time for today, but if you remember, I was vacillating about what to get next for myself for cars. And one of the cars I was talking about was a 308 GT4, the little wedge car, the Bertone wedge car. The other one I like is the Lamborghini Urocco, the little baby Lamborghini called the Urocco. They're around the same period. They're around the same look. I found a Urocco, a P250, so that should be the 250 horsepower, right? Because they made a 200, a 250, and a 300 in the Uroccos. What do you think about the Urocco versus a 308 GT4? Do you think it's as good of a car?
I like the Urocco because it's so unusual. Yeah. Now, actually, the one to really get is a Silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very rare, of course, had a wing on the back, and you know, sort of they were trying to make a mini Countach out of it, I think. But I restored two Silhouettes, actually. I restored one, and then somebody found out I was the fool that restored the first one, so I might as well do another one. But the Urocco, I think, is a very, very cool car. I seem to like it a little bit more than the 308 GT4, although I think they're fantastic cars.
Yeah, there's a rarity, like you said.
The one car that if you could move up the ladder a little bit more would be a Bora. I think the Bora is fabulous.
Now, you talked about the Bora, and you think America is a six-cylinder version, but the Bora is a V8 car.
Yeah, so Bora's a V8, a Merak is the six-cylinder. Okay. So a little bit different look of the Merak. It's sort of like the Dino competition that they were coming out with.
Yeah.
But a Bora is a fabulous, fabulous car. But you got to get it dialed in. If it's not dialed in, if the shocks are bad, or if the hydraulic system is bad or something else, it's just a pain in the neck. Believe it or not, the windows go up and down hydraulically. Everything runs through hydraulics. The seats move hydraulically.
That's how my 1949 Lincoln worked. 1949 Lincoln was doing that. And you're saying they were doing that in the 70s. On a Maserati. Yeah. I love it.
Well, I mean, Citroën got involved with them. I don't know if it was the financing or whatever, but of course they were supplying a lot of products for Maserati at that point in time.
Maserati did change hands quite a few times, and I think Citroën really probably saved their bacon once, as Chrysler did. And I mean, Maserati has such a heritage when you go back to the 3500s and even back to the racing days. And then it just, in the 60s and 70s, you know, after the Quattroporte, it all just started getting torn up and moved around. I love the Mexico from that time period and the Sebring from that period.
Sebring is fabulous.
Sebring is a cool car. There was a Series 1 Sebring, which is an alloy body car on Bring a Trailer that needed an engine rebuild. And I thought, oh, it'd just be a money pit to try to bring one of those back. I mean, just from what you could see. Well,
Matt had a conversation with me about a Maserati yesterday. He had a great opportunity to buy a modern day Maserati and I cringed at it. I said, be careful.
Let me guess what it was. It must have been the Chrysler TC looking Maserati that has the tridents on the quarter windows. It's nothing more than a K car. No,
Matt, Matt, you can.
What was it, Matt? A biturbo?
It was a quattroporte.
What I told Matt, Matt says it'd make a great coffee table. I said yes, except for the thing would blow up in your living room, and then oil would be all over the floor, antifreeze. You know, it's not even good for a coffee table.
It's called a mercy killing, Wayne. What we're talking about here is a mercy killing.
Well, you know, it's an unfortunate thing. They're Ferrari engines.
Yeah.
I mean, but yet they just couldn't get. The transmissions were bad. Everything was bad. The electronics.
The door panels on those things were known to like droop and fall off. I mean, they had so many problems.
They had so many problems. And the only way they could sell them in the United States were leases. And then, of course, when the lease is over, people beg that they don't want to buy the car. They beg to get rid of
Please,
it.
Please take,
you know,
it back.
Take it back to the dealership on the back of a flatbed and they drop it off, you know.
Oh, it's sad.
I'm sorry, Maserati dealers, but
I know.
It's true.
I know. It's a tough one. You know, I think it's getting better now, but it's so tough. You know, I visited the Maserati factory in 2015. My wife took me on a tour of the Motor Valley. So we visited Ferrari, right? The 458 is kind of finishing up. They're going into the 488. And the production line was so modern and so up to date. I mean, hermetically lab where they made the engines and, you know, the bodies moved up and down on the assembly line. And they had a robot that put the windscreens in. For Ferrari, right? Then we go to Lamborghini and Santagata. Clean as a whistle. This is right before they started making the Urus. So it was still Aventador SV. Is it the SV? Yeah. And one at a time they're making them. You can tell Audi has put all the money into the keeping it hand built, but high quality. All right. So we've done those two. Now we're going to go visit Maserati. So you go to the Maserati factory and it was like taking a step back in time. The assembly line was the old, you know, chain hook bodies moving around. The guys going out to a yard to go get their parts and walk back. But I was like, oh my gosh. They just, they hadn't updated at that point. They hadn't quite moved up. Yep. And they were making the Alfa Romeo 4C, the little Alfa, in a building next door. So they were really at that last years of kind of the holdover from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I visited all the factories too, and on our honeymoon when we went over to Italy, and we went all over Europe. We went to the Monaco Grand Prix on our honeymoon, but it was very archaic back then, of course. And
yeah,
it was just actually when we went through Ferrari, we went through Pinifarina's factory.
Ooh,
or Scaglietti, I would say.
Yeah,
I should say not Pinifarina, but Scaglietti. They were just making the 288 GTOs.
Wow! Did you take pictures on that trip?
That's something never to discuss. Yes, we did, but we got robbed one night, and all the camera equipment and all the stuff went away.
That is so sad.
They took my backpack with all the camera, the film we took, all that stuff. We got robbed in Nice in our hotel room. We were sleeping, and they broke in. We were on the second floor. They climbed up into the balcony and then came in. I woke up and I saw two guys in the room and I thought I was dreaming, but I slapped myself silly of, you know, okay, wake up, pal. And they last thing I could see was their fingers letting go off the balcony and dropping down to two tables that they propped up to climb up into the room. So yeah, I lost my wallet, but my wife was very smart every night. And I traveled to Europe a lot and always said, what are you so fearful of? And she'd hide our passport and our traveler's checks every night. And they grabbed my pants and my wallet was in my pants and that was it. Bang. Everything was gone. My backpack with all my camera equipment in it and my wallet were gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Imagine. Okay. We talked about the Paul McCartney base of the game. I know we're almost out of time. We talked about, imagine if all these years later you get a knock on the door and this guy's like, hey, I think this is your stuff. And you got the photos back and your wallet. That would be, you could make a book about all
that blow my mind. You know, I lost my class ring once. I really don't like wearing rings. So I lost my class ring and I always wondered where it was. Well, about 10 years ago, I get an email from a guy and he says, I have your class ring. I want to come and see you. I said, oh my God, where did you find an email? He found it at a bowling alley. I had taken the ring off to go bowling and it dropped down in to the ball return machine, and he's revitalizing this bowling alley, and there's my ring, and it was at Glastonbury High School, and he saw the initials in it. My initials were in it, and so he shows up, and I says, "Oh, thanks so much." She says, "No, thanks so much." She says, "That'll be $500." Well, you can keep the ring. I don't wear rings anyways for $500. And finally, I got him down to $25 out of $500. I said, here's $25. That's all you're going to get out of me.
All right.
It's better than nothing. You imagine holding me hostage for some class ring that probably cost $50 when I was a kid, you know? I got it back, and now I have no idea where it is. I know
it's lost again. Yeah. Well, I think we've covered everything today.
Glass rings, Yawakos.
Yeah, we've been all over the place. This is what happens when Matt lets us off the leash. We just kind of pontificate, but hopefully you guys had fun listening in. It's always fun talking classic cars and another great one. Oh, really quick before we wrap up, Wayne, what are you driving this week? What do you got for a modern ride?
A new car!
So I've got a Subaru. I just gave up a Mazda, though. The new CX-90.
Oh, yeah. The big SUV.
The new SUV.
Yeah.
Super.
They're nice. Yeah, they're very nice. Mazda's
very
got some good stuff.
With that car. Good-looking car.
Yeah.
And it's a little noisy, the engine, but once you're going down the highway, I drove it from Boston last week at the Press Association. We had our winter driving experience, so we were up for that, and I got that to drive home. Great little car. This week, I've got a Crosstrek Subaru.
Okay.
So it's a little strange with the cladding on the side and stuff,
yeah.
But still, all cars are really great. Just some are better than others.
That's right. I've got the new.
Yeah, what are you driving?
I've got the new Mustang GT, and it has two digital dashes. So it has a digital binnacle and then a digital, infotainment screen. And I'm still getting used to that. I really miss analog gauges. There's something about looking at a flat screen in a muscle car that takes a little bit of the flavor away. I'll say that the motor is great. It's 480 horsepower from the factory now for a GT. They pushed it way back. So, back two cylinders are underneath your dash. So the motor sits nice and back. It doesn't feel front heavy at all. They did a good job of, really belying that big V8 in the front. They're independent suspension in the rear now, so they behave well around corners.
Yeah.
And it's the 6-speed manual, which is a great transmission. Nothing to complain about. It's a pretty great car. It's got tons of bite, tons of bark. I'm not sure about the looks. I think they put a little too much Camaro going on in the rear hips for my liking.
It is.
A little too much, but otherwise the front looks really mean and the back looks good. And it's I love the fact that we're still making V8 naturally aspirated muscle cars in the year 2024. It's not going
to
last
according
forever.
According to Jim Farley, it's going to continue.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says it's not going away this year, at least. So we'll see what happens. I just bought my RS6 Avant station wagon, and it said, this is the last one. Well, of course, the factory comes out and says, well, not quite yet. They're going to make 600 versions of the Rally.
I saw that. That white one is cool looking.
The white one with all the graphics on it and stuff. It's going to be $250,000. And there's not going to be any more improvements on performance, on power, on anything. You're basically going to get a white one with graphics on it, and you're going to have to pay $100,000 more.
And it's raised up a little bit, right? It's like rally height. They did
probably.
Like, I think they did a lift kit. You get a lift kit for $100,000. Come on, I don't know what you're complaining about.
Jay, we'll see you down in Florida. We really look forward to seeing you and Matt down in Florida, and we're going to have a great time at Amelia.
Absolutely. I'll see you guys down the road.
See ya.